We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz here on WQM. We'll talk to Stefano Fusaro of ESPN. He is based in Houston. I saw yesterday he was on television, Ira, covering the return of Deshaun Watson to Houston Texans practice.
Pretty interesting. Stefano, remember, was at NBC6 before yesterday's guest, Chris Fisher, came aboard. So we're doing the alumni tour, and I believe Joe worked at NBC6 also.
Yes,
so
he
It's all in the family here. I mean, and Stefano will be really interesting because, one, not only is he doing Deshaun Watson, he's covered the Rockets extensively for ESPN during the playoffs, and Harden and Chris Paul and what went on there. He actually, I believe, had a soccer podcast or else a soccer website when he was down here also. So he's sort of touching all the bases of all our hot buttons today.
And I know we've talked, like, I used to play soccer with Stefano every Sunday, and he's a big Argentina fan. So we'll get his thoughts. I have actually predicted as part of my World Cup bracket that Argentina will go out in the group stage.
Really?
Yeah.
This is not going to be Messi's step forward,
I don't think so. I think they had their chance. They got to the final in 2014. They went to Copa America final 2015, 2016. They lost all of them. I think they're just a bad team. And sometimes internationally is the ultimate example of whole being greater than the sum of the parts. Argentina is the quintessential sum of the parts team. You look at their team and go, oh, they should be incredible. They're not. They're a bad team. In qualifying, they played 18 games and they scored 19 goals. Like, they're just not a good team. And you see it all the time. Germany is both. Spain is both. But very often you see, like, France is another version of this, where it's sum of the parts. Right? They're a collection of talent. They're not a good team. And so you see that sometimes at the World Cup. So for me, Argentina out at the group stage. That's my big prediction.
You have to understand, he's talking soccer all morning and my mouth is agape. People usually know I'm rarely at a loss for words and I'm like, huh? So I'm just kind of sitting like that. But I have to ask you one thing. Since I'm Mr. Soccer Neophyte sitting here for once being the guy who doesn't have all the answers, I always thought for years between Messi and Ronaldo, it was sort of back and forth as to who.
Sure.
What is it called? The Golden Boot or whatever?
The Ballon d'Or.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you use language like that, you're going to have to leave. Okay. What has happened in recent years where Messi has backtracked to the point where it's only a one-person debate? Am I correct that it's that Ronaldo was just it?
No.
And that Messi's a step back?
No. I think Messi's still there. The reason why Messi's kind of faded from the limelight a little bit is because Real Madrid has been to and won the last three Champions Leagues, right? And the Champions League. And actually, what's funny about the World Cup is everyone loves the World Cup, but the Champions League is a far better competition in terms of quality of soccer
and depth of talent. Teams.
Right. And because the teams are playing together 9 months a year, you see that chemistry. Whereas national teams kind of get together once a month, you know, 6 months a year, like for 2 weeks.
And then
they're not actually together all year round.
And to further drive traffic away from the start of Big O's show in an hour here, one more soccer question. I promise I'll leave it alone.
I'll leave it alone.
The whole Neymar thing, and when he went to PSG, there was a question of going to a lesser league, but maybe a bigger name franchise, getting to Paris Saint-Germain. I understand that. Where is he sort of? Is he still in the big three, or is he a considerable step below?
No, I would say he's still the third best player in the world. I think there have been other players that have kind of made their case, but I mean, Neymar was still incredible for Paris Saint-Germain this year, and he's been actually really good. So he actually had a pretty bad injury in February with PSG and didn't play for them for the rest of the season, but he's healthy and he's been playing for Brazil in their friendlies before the tournament. He looks good, man. He looks fresh and ready to go. I think I've picked Brazil to win it.
All right,
why don't
we do this? Since we talked about the meaningless third place game also earlier, and because you're actually going to take the rest of the week off and step back and sleep a little. Top three teams, World Cup finishers, and then actually want to get to one other World Cup thing you and I have been talking about a week about talking and not get to. But real quick, the top three.
Okay,
win, play, show.
All right, so Brazil for me are going to win it. They are the betting favorites to win, and they've been incredible. I think no doubt they get to the final. The teams that are most likely to be in their way if they win their group are Uruguay, Portugal, and France. I don't think any of those teams. I don't think any of those teams measure up to Brazil. So for me, Brazil already has a nailed on place in the final. The other half of the bracket to me, though, are the other two teams, Spain and Germany. If they win their groups, if Spain wins their group, which, by the way, they've got an incredible story going on right now. They fired their manager the day before the tournament starts.
And by manager, you mean coach?
Their coach.
Okay.
So they fired their coach.
I'm going to translate, folks, for Mr. Whittingham, who doesn't even spell his last name right,
so
but go ahead.
Their coach took the Real Madrid job. It was announced yesterday that he's going to take the Real Madrid job. There was such a revolt because he only told his bosses in Spain 5 minutes before the announcement went up.
Right.
He told them 5 minutes before, and they were furious to the point that they actually skipped the vote today for the World Cup hosting so that they can go and fire their manager.
So this, to me, would be, we talked about this during a break, of Mike Krzyzewski as coach of the U.S. Olympic teams. It would be like Mike Krzyzewski about to go to the Olympics, deciding he's going to leave Duke to coach at UCLA, and the U.S. Olympic Committee said, if that's your priority, your college coaching career, you're a bum and you're out of here.
Yeah, and we're going to pluck one of the assistants to go and do the job. So I think Spain, just they're such a good team. They almost don't even need a manager. Like, they're so cohesively built that I think Spain is still going to get to the semifinal. Now, the path looks a lot more difficult when we don't know who the manager is, you know, 48 hours before the tournament starts.
Another neophyte question I always ask.
Sure.
Soccer has a huge pitch. Unlike in the NFL, when everyone has their headsets on, where there's guys sending in signals, in college they hold up the signs, you know, with Britney Spears and stuff. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah, in baseball they're doing the
thing. I've always wondered in soccer, usually, especially Bruce Arena, looks like he's very unhappy and miserable all the time, okay?
Yes.
How much impact does a soccer manager have during the actual course of a game that, unlike most American sports, features no timeouts except for the ridiculous stretcher guys running on the field?
You hear them shouting instructions, but I, to be honest with you, I don't know, because I don't know what their players can hear. You hear them shouting. I don't know how effective it is for them to actually stand on the touchline and try and scream out their instructions at the top of their lungs or try and change things.
Do they change things? In other words, in football, you'll put your nickel and your dime packages and stuff like that. Will you actually, through the flowing course of a soccer game, change your alignments?
Yes. So the most kind of common changes that are made are either you play with three defenders or four defenders, right? Three defenders are kind of more narrow, four are more spread out. You play either one forward, one striker, or two. You will see teams in the course of a game change from three at the back to four at the back. You will see teams kind of do different things with the way that they align their teams to really change the way that they're attacking their opponent. And you'll see it happen mid-game. It's actually funny, there have been a couple of times this year in the Premier League where I've seen managers hand notes to a player so that they run out of the field and they have the notes in front of them and they're screaming it out. So there are ways of changing things, but yeah, it is really hard. But either way, so Spain is changing manager and they're on a collision course with playing Germany in the semifinal. I stared at that game for 15 minutes and I decided I think Germany is going to go to the final.
Okay.
So I think your final is going to be Brazil and Germany, which is going to be an incredible game, and I think Brazil is going to win it.
And then one other thing, and I'm sorry we didn't have more time to discuss this, because you and I have been talking about this for days. The U.S. is not in this year's World Cup. We found out at the start of our show this morning the U.S. will host, along with Canada and Mexico, the 2026 World Cup.
I have an update on that, by the way, but we'll
2022 is going to
Qatar.
We're going to be played later in the year because of it. Okay, I don't have a rooting interest. The U.S. isn't in there. What's fun for me? I always do this. I'll turn on a NASCAR race on Sunday, have no interest, and say, go Joey Logano, because I want to root for someone through the course of it. I'll watch the French Open. I'll pick someone there. So who are the compelling storylines that if I don't have a ethnic background or someone like that, or I'm not from a country, but I want to watch the World Cup, I need to pick a team, Chris Whittingham. Who's going to be fun for me to root for over this next month?
All right, so I've got a few candidates for you. I'll start with Egypt. Egypt are making the World Cup, I believe, for the first time in like over 20 years. It's been a long time since they played at the World Cup. So they finally make it, and they found a player named Mohamed Salah, who plays for Liverpool, who got hurt in the Champions League final, and he scored over 40 goals this year between domestic and cup competitions this year for Egypt. And it's incredible the degree to which the hopes of a nation rest on one player. For me, I love those kinds of stories where they're basically, their whole existence is based off of what Mohamed Salah can do. And South Korea has a bit of that too with Heung-Min Son of Tottenham Hotspur. But Egypt, for me, watching the hopes of a nation, can he be healthy? Can he be good enough to go? And they can get out of the group because they're in the group with the host Russia. Russia, for me, are not very good. They're also in a group with Saudi Arabia. If they can win those two games, they'd advance. I think Uruguay wins that group, but Egypt can't get out. They'll be fun. The Peruvians, we saw them here at Hard Rock Stadium. They played a friendly against Croatia. Mm-hmm. There were 45,000 Peruvians there. They're loud. They're insane because they made the World Cup for the first time since 1982. And they're always kind of stuck behind the powers of South America, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador. They've had such a hard time qualifying. They finally did the job this year. They did so via the playoff. They beat New Zealand over a two-legged playoff to get to the World Cup. It's been 36 years. And as I heard a great anecdote on my soccer podcast, where the guy who scored the winning goal mm-hmm. for Peru was driving home. And from the airport after coming back from New Zealand, mm-hmm. and he was surrounded by three cars, and he thought he was going to be kidnapped, and it was just guys lowering their window, going "Thank you!" like at the top of their lungs, screaming. So the Peruvians are fun, and the Icelandic
that's
are awesome.
What I was going to ask
it's such
you.
A great right. story. But to me, the thing. So for those who don't know about Iceland, country of 350,000 people, they decided to care about soccer. They have like one coach for every 17 people in the country, right? And they figured out a way to get good at soccer. They went to the European Championships in 2016 and went to the quarterfinal. They've now qualified for the World Cup. Their population is 350,000. Which is mm-hmm. the size of Corpus Christi, Texas, which is smaller than Peoria, Illinois. Like the number of people that are in this country is incredible for them to be a World Cup nation. They too have a chance to get out of the group. They're with Argentina, Croatia, and Nigeria. They went to the quarterfinal of the European Championships. They'll be fun. But to me, the thing though, Ira, is that if you had asked me this question in 2014,
right.
I never would have said the Colombians.
Okay.
And the Colombians took the World Cup by storm. They went to the quarterfinal. They lost to Brazil in the end, and they played some of the most entertaining soccer at the tournament.
Even without Valderrama's hair? Even without... Okay.
Yes, James Rodriguez became a star on the world stage, and they were the most fun team to watch, and I, as a Colombian, loved the hell out of it. So it will find you, right? Like, you will see after the first, you know, set of group games, there will be a team that establishes themselves as the entertainment team for the tournament and the team you want to get behind. So
ultimate long shot. Maybe it's probably Iceland, like you mentioned anyway. But if yeah. I'm the kind of person who will want to root for the feel-good story of the World Cup, maybe there's someone there who has an emotional something yeah. going on, a mm-hmm. country going through strife.
Yeah.
What would be the emotional team that people might rally behind in
it's
the
Iceland.
World Cup?
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. Because
so
how small it is. It's
so
just
my my bumper sticker should be, "We are Iceland."
Correct, yeah. We are all Iceland.
And I am going to leave the show mm-hmm. and go home. My wife going to go, "What did you talk about today for 4 hours? I'm going to tell her soccer, and then she's going to go, "No, on the radio, on the part that was on the air."
So, by the way, very quickly, we'll get to Stefano Fusaro coming up next. I just wanted to point out, so the U.S. won the World Cup today, mm-hmm. along with Mexico and Canada. There are going to be 60 games played in this country. And there are 23 cities but 7 of them are in Canada and Mexico. So there's 60 games played here. There are 16 host cities. So just for the record, so that people in our audience know, the 2026 World Cup will likely mm-hmm. feature 3 or 4 games played in Miami during this World Cup. So that,
right.
for me, is pretty cool that you're going to get multiple games coming here, and the World Cup will definitely be a big part of Miami in 2026. So you have that to look forward to in 8 years' time. Coming up next is Stefano Fusaro covers the Houston Rockets, the Houston Texans, all Houston things, and we'll talk some Argentina with him as well.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Chris Whittingham and Ira Winderman in for Joe Rose and Zach Kranz here on WQAM. Again, if you're just joining us, the United States has won the bid to host the 2026 World Cup.
United States and friends.
Right, yes, United States and friends, along with Canada and Mexico, which, by the way, we were talking about earlier. I don't know if they win without Canada and Mexico, because from a political standpoint, they have certainly helped, they're sort of assuage the
yes.
difficulties they've had politically with other countries. But one of the actually cities that is going to be hosting the World Cup, there's 16 in America that are included in the bid book. Miami, one of them, is Houston. And we're joined now by someone who has spent a lot of time in Houston, is covering the Houston Texans, and Deshaun Watson's return right now. And that is Stefano Fusaro, reporter for ESPN, based out of Houston at the moment. Stefano, appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, of course, man. How you guys doing?
So is there World Cup fever in Houston as well?
There definitely was. I was actually here in Houston for the World Cup in 2014, and this city was alive, just like you would see Miami alive.
Yeah.
Just everywhere you go, bars, different watch parties. I live near an area of Houston called Midtown, and that place is just popping. Everywhere you go,
yeah,
there's a World Cup party. There's, you know, different themes, different nationalities. It's obviously a lot of very diverse city, kind of just like South Florida is. And so, yeah, there's definitely a lot of fever down here, up here for the World Cup.
And we'll get to the World Cup later on as well. Talk about your beloved Argentina. But let's talk some Houston Rockets first. I actually want to actually hit on Deshaun Watson a little bit. But some Houston Rockets first. Obviously, the conversation with them at the moment is what they would have to do to get LeBron James in. I feel like the machinations of that are almost impossible to pull off. Do you still feel like there's a sense of optimism around the Rockets that they can do it?
Look, Tiller Fertitta, the team owner, has kind of been saying the right things as far as, you know, his free agents are concerned, you know, saying that they don't need – he hasn't been saying LeBron by name, obviously, because of the rules, but he's basically continued and maintained that they want the same team back, they want Capella back, that he'll go into the luxury tax even if it means – you know, he'll sign Capella even if it does mean going into the luxury tax. He can say all that all he wants. And LeBron does say, hey, I want to come to Houston. He's going to want to do whatever he has to do to get him there. Obviously, that means Capella would be gone. That means Trevor Ariza wouldn't be re-signed. There'd be a couple of, you know, there'd be other moves that have to happen. Eric Gordon probably wouldn't be around. There is some optimism that he's considering Houston, at least, being that Chris Paul is his best friend and they're there. I think that the fact that, they, you know, all the reports out there that saying Chris Paul is already recruiting LeBron, I don't really believe all that because I don't think he needs to recruit him. They're best friends. They talk all the time, and this I know. And you know what I mean? Like, he's not, they don't, he doesn't need to really recruit him. If he wants to come here, he's going to talk to Chris Paul and say, hey, what do you think? This is what I want to do, and that's how it's going to go down.
Stefano, is there any downside to LeBron? I mean, his age and where the Rockets are and where they want to be at the identity they have. I remember last year when Chris Paul came in, the thought immediately was, there are two primary ball handlers. This will never work. Well, it worked all the way to the best record in the Western Conference and in the NBA and within a game seven against the Warriors. Is there any part of you, as someone who was embedded with the team during the playoffs, has been around him as much, that sort of steps back and says, you know what, LeBron might still be the best player in the game, but maybe not the perfect fit for what this team does, shooting three-pointers and where they want to go?
I mean, I think you can kind of look at it in a few ways, right? When LeBron came to Miami, he had obviously another ball-dominant guard like Dwayne Wade. I think Dwayne Wade kind of learned to play off the ball a little bit more. Can James Harden do that? I think that's the biggest question that you need to ask. Can James Harden learn how to play off the ball even more than he did, you know, in certain moments last year when Chris Paul was doing his thing? It was really a lot about, I mean, we saw it. It was so much about ISO ball. That was really what they did and what they did well. So you had Chris Paul doing it one way, James Harden doing it another way. If you add LeBron to that mix, somebody else who needs the ball in his hands, who's going to create, how does James Harden move? How does he react to that? How does he, is he able to play off the ball? Is he able to cut? We see that, you know, when the ball's not in his hands, he's not really moving a whole lot on offense. So, you know, it's kind of, you have to kind of figure out if that's going to be possible. I don't know if it is. I don't know if James Harden has the same type of basketball IQ that Dwayne Wade had to realize, hey, I need to do this. This is how I need to play if I want to really make an impact. Now, as far as the three-point shooting, we know that LeBron needs to have shooters around him. They do have the shooters around him on the team, but how many of them would still be around in the game? So that's the issue.
And then I'm just curious, because we've been talking, obviously, for days. Everyone who has a chance to get LeBron is talking about their city first from the perspective of what will it take? What are the odds? Just as someone who also covers the NBA as a whole and covering the playoffs from sort of a greater perspective, what's your take on LeBron? In other words, I know you don't want to oversell Houston and sort of talk yourself into it. If you were a neutral person in neutral city USA, what do you think is going to happen with LeBron?
I mean, I just don't see him wanting. I mean, I don't see him coming to the West unless it's for something, you know, unless it's in L.A. or something. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, why, at this point in his career, why would he come to the Western Conference where he has to go through the Warriors and the Rockets, the two best teams in basketball, just to get to the finals? It just doesn't make sense to me. Does Philadelphia make the most sense? maybe there is some roster issues there that you don't know who could still be around, what shooters they can surround him around, especially when we have a Ben Simmons that, you know, doesn't shoot pretty much anywhere outside the paint.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think Philadelphia would make the most sense just because they're in the Eastern Conference and they have an up-and-coming squad that can extend his career, but they do have to have shooting around him, and I don't know how much of that would be left. I don't think there really is a clear-cut option for him that says, okay, this will be the greatest situation moving forward. There's going to be a lot of moves that either any of the teams are going to have to make to really adjust to him and to his playing style.
Stefano Fusaro joining us here on WQAM, reporter for ESPN based out of Houston. Do you feel like, though, that if Daryl Morey decided, okay, we missed out on LeBron, we couldn't figure out a way to make that work, and they just ran it back, they re-signed Capella, and maybe they got one or two sort of low-price free agents, do you feel like they would feel that that's good enough? What feeling did they leave that series against Golden State with, that they're not far away?
Definitely. I mean, you heard Mike D'Antoni, and he was just in his, you know, in his exit interview, in his exit press conference, he was very, very adamant about the fact that, you know, they were very close, and that, you know, he went up to Kevin Durant after the series was over and told him, "Congratulations, but if Chris Paul would have been around, we would have won this series. We would have won this series in seven." And you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree with him, but it would have been a definite possibility. I mean, the way that they were playing. The way that he was playing, specific Chris Paul, in that series, you'd have to think that, yeah, they had a chance. Tillman Fertitta has continued to say that, yeah, they want this team back because they're so close. So they're confident that with that team playing a little better and staying healthy, they could definitely have a shot at the Warriors. I mean, guys, it got up to Game 7, and, you know, anything could have happened in a Game 7 with a healthy Houston Rocket team.
And then, obviously, because you're emerging as a potential city of champions, we've already seen it in baseball, but I have a football question for you. You have such a dynamic young quarterback on the team there. You obviously are going to get one of the preeminent defensive players in the NFL back. What's the optimism, number one, regarding the upcoming season? And what's the optimism there as far as quarterback growth and potential? Will they just pick up from where they left off before the injury?
I think so. They're not trying to. We were at minicamp yesterday. I'll be there a little later today as well. They are not trying to hold him back. They're not trying to hold Deshaun Watson back at any point this season. They want to open up the playbook. They want him to be aggressive when he needs to. Now, of course, the Texans quarterback's coach, Sean Ryan, told us that he definitely has to have that conversation with Deshaun, about knowing when to take the risk, when to come out of the pocket, and when to go down to protect not only himself, but really the franchise. And there is optimism because, hey, if this team stays healthy last year, you know, they didn't win a game after Deshaun Watson went down.
Right.
I'm going to have somebody out here trying to cut the grass. And
We've all been there.
But anyway, yeah, so there is definitely some optimism as far as the Texans is concerned. They didn't win a game after Deshaun went down last year. And, you know, they had J.J. Watt go down. They had Whitney Mercilus go down. They had injuries all over the field on both sides of the ball. So if they stay healthy, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to some of my producers. Mm-hmm. I covered the Cowboys last year a ton when I was staying in Dallas.
Right.
Now that I'm here, you know, I was still expected to go up to Dallas to cover some of the Cowboys stuff. But in reality, if this team stays healthy, they should be better than the Cowboys. It should be one of the top teams, at least definitely in the AFC South, if not, you know, in the AFC, period. If they could stay healthy, they'll be a dangerous squad for sure.
Well, I want to take it a little further into Deshaun Watson, because I think he has the possibility of being a breakout star for years to come. And even in the limited view we got of him, I think he is much more of an NFL prospect than I might have originally thought coming out of college, and they certainly hit on that. Do you see greatness? Do you see where I was curious before, whether it be more Manziel-like and flash in the pan and run and throw quarterback? Is there someone you see? Is that a player you see in Deshaun Watson as being emerging into the elite level and not just being sort of the two-way quarterback, but a unique generational quarterback?
I think a lot of people didn't know just how good of an arm he had. And I think we saw it early on last year. That combination between him and DeAndre Hopkins and him and Will Fuller really kind of showed what he can do as long as he has protection. That offensive line was pretty awful last year, and he was still able to do what he did in seven games and really was on pace for a historic rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been a rookie of the year for sure had he continued on pace and continued to stay healthy. Yeah, I do think so. I do think that we're seeing a quarterback that, if healthy, can definitely become an elite quarterback in this league. And he does have the weapons around him already. You know, a lot of the weapons around him already. Maybe, you know, they could use another tight end. That could be something that they would do in the future. But he definitely has the wide receivers. He definitely has, you know, the backfield to be able to do it. He has elite talent. Now, whether he stays healthy, like, you know, with all of these dual threat quarterbacks, that's the big question. You know, whether he becomes an RG3 that continues to get injured, or whether he does stay healthy and really could be an elite quarterback. He has the talent, that's for sure. And the Texans are super excited about him. That's no doubt.
Stefano Fusaro joining us here on WQAM, reporter for ESPN, mainly based out of Houston. On the way out for you, Stefano, I am going to upset you right now because I'm going to say,
I know what you're
going to
say,
that Argentina is going to go out of the group stage.
Man, come on. Come on, man. Come on, man. Look, I'll be honest with you. I don't have a lot of confidence with this Argentina squad. You know that that's like the one team that still will bring me to tears at this point in my life.
Yeah.
There's no other team that I root for that will make me that upset when they do lose. But look, I'm not confident in this squad. I do think they'll make it out of the group stage. Nigeria has historically given them some issues, but at the end of the day, they've had beaten them over several World Cups. Nigeria's been in their group about, I think it's like four straight World Cups or three of the last four World Cups. But they've given them some trouble. But if they can, I think they'll make it out. I'm not confident that they'll get past the quarterfinals. Look, the attacking options are, you know, they have plenty of attacking
Ridiculous.
Options. We know this already. Mm-hmm. Messi, Aguero, Higuain, Dybala, they have those guys. But the midfield is old. They've had plenty of injuries already throughout this first couple weeks, just after the season ended and getting ready for the World Cup. They've had Lancini go down. It's bad.
Sergio Romero, too, in goal.
It's just a big – I think they have too many issues. Now, the one thing that, you know, we can bank on and you can hope for if you're an Argentina fan is that you got Messi on your squad.
Yeah.
Yes, he hasn't been the greatest with Argentina, but if he can have a magical World Cup, you know, they could make some noise. But, yeah, I'm not very confident.
Who do you think is going to win it then?
I've been going back and forth, but I think I'm going to have to go with France.
Really? Interesting.
Choke. I think top to bottom, A to Z, I think they are the most talented squad in the World Cup. Now, whether they can win is a whole different story, whether they don't choke like they have in the past, like they did in their own Euro Cup in 2016, in their own country, in the final against Portugal. So I do think that they're the most talented squad. I'm kind of cautious about that pick, but I'm going to stick with it because I think they're the most talented squad.
I agree with you. I mean, the guys they bring off the bench are just ridiculous.
They're by far
the most talented team. But again, for me, Argentina, France are kind of in the same group for me, which is teams with talented players that don't have really a cohesion or a team ability that I feel like is good enough to win the World Cup. But we'll find out. It starts tomorrow. Russia taking on Saudi Arabia. Stefano Fusaro covering the Houston Texans, the Houston Rockets, and various other things for ESPN.
And cutting the grass, apparently, also. Thank you, Stefano.
Twitter, @FusaroESPN. Appreciate it, sir.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right,
Thank you.
Is Stefano Fusaro joining us here on WQAM. We'll round things out next here on The Q.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz, rounding things out here on WQAM here until 10. Ira Winderman was poo-pooing my future in this business during the commercial break because I was listening to Amelia DeVita's traffic reports and trying to work out my Australian accent.
Because you want to go to Brisbane and do it in an English accent there to get even. I understand.
Well, now, see, the problem is that sometimes it's really hard to kind of figure out the crossover between all the different, you know, first off, you know, people say that my English accent comes from all the different cities of England because I've kind of heard bits and pieces of every accent.
Oh, it's an English accent. Okay, all right.
How dare you? How dare you? But so I'm working on my Australian items. Like I just hear sort of. But actually, by the way, there is one phrase that you can say without ever knowing anything about the Australian accent, or by actually practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this. I've actually been to Australia and they taught me this.
Uh huh.
So you say the word razor blades, but you don't say it razor blades. You say it rise up lights, and then you say it quickly, and then you say rise up lights. And then it sounds like razor blades. And that's how you would say it in an Australian accent. Do you want to try it?
No, because I figure if I travel to Australia, the odds of me using that one word, like I'm going to Italy this summer. So like I figure there's a few catchphrases like how to get to the train, where's the hotel, you know, can you let me know where the bathroom is, something like that. Probably not going to be asking anyone on the street where I can get razor blades, even with my English accent. Not going to work for me, Whittingham.
Okay, fair enough. Have you learned any Italian yet?
I'm afraid I don't want to be the guy with the Google phone who's just talking into my phone and translating like that.
There's actually a great story. I told you about this before the show. There's a story out of the World Cup. So Antoine Griezmann, who's a player for France, he plays in Spain, and there's a lot of rumors about him potentially changing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a Spanish reporter who went to the press conference, but they were told the only questions in French. And so he wanted to ask the player about, is there anything for you for an update?
Right.
But he doesn't know French. And so rather than basically do the translate on his phone and then read it himself, he held his phone to the microphone that you're given to ask questions and played the answer in French. And the press office, the PR person was like, no, we're not doing this. We're not like he was furious that he figured out a way to game the system by using Google Translate. But we were just talking about Deshaun Watson in the previous segment, and I wanted to talk about sort of the major injuries, right? So Ryan Tannehill is coming back from a major injury off of knee surgery and is going to try and go this season. So they're going to try and go this season at basically having Ryan Tannehill come back and look like himself. There are two other quarterbacks in the league that, for me, are the most interesting when it comes to this. Yesterday, we saw a video of Andrew Luck throwing again.
Right.
And we'll get
he's still a thing?
Yeah. Well, he missed all last season because he had a shoulder injury, and he hasn't been able to throw for like a year and a half. So if I said to you, coming into next year, do you feel more confident if you're a Colts fan with Andrew Luck coming back, or Ryan Tannehill or if you're a Dolphins fan with Ryan Tannehill coming back? Not in terms of them being great, because at full strength, Andrew Luck is better than Ryan Tannehill. I'm saying returning to form and looking most like themselves from before the injury happened.
Can I take Carson Wentz, or do I have to go with your choices there?
That's a fair one as well. I mean, Carson Wentz is going to take a while, though.
I think Tannehill will be fine, but I don't think he'll be optimal for this reason. I think it's when he was running some of the option plays, when he was getting outside, when he was using sort of some of his wide receiver athleticism. Those, I thought, were his best days. You can try to put him back into that, but I wonder if he's going to be a little more tentative, and maybe should be a little more tentative, because a lot of the running quarterbacks, that's the problem. Like with Carson Wentz, or you can't keep playing that way, it catches up with you. So I think the injury, to a degree, might make him more of a pocket passer, which he might need to be anyway. So yeah, I would put him ahead of Luck, because again, he's not throwing the ball with his knee. He's throwing it with his shoulder, where Luck is throwing the ball with his shoulder, so it's that different. And man, for the Colts, it's all or nothing. Yeah. It's just all or nothing on him. That's what they're built around. That's what they do. And we see how bad they are without him, with all apologies. Do they still have Jacoby Brissett? Is he still in the mix there?
I think he might be, actually.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, for what they have in the mix, I think it's more all or nothing for what the Colts can be.
Who's the coach of the Colts?
Well, it's not Chuck Pagano anymore, right?
Right. Yes. And then they had McDaniels, but I feel like everyone kind of forgot who replaced the guy who was going to replace the guy. I feel like no one knows who the coach of the Colts is.
Well, without Luck, they probably won't have it. Probably won't matter there anyway. So that's another story for another day.
So for me, I agree with you 100%. Like, I actually think even if the athleticism is down a bit from Ryan Tannehill, it's still like he'll be a reasonable facsimile of himself, right? It'll still look most like Ryan Tannehill from before the injury.
Except the one thing I'm wondering about, and Omar Kelly, who'll be filling in the next 2 days, and after this camp, might be able to fill us in a little bit more. I do worry about the fact that his safety net in Jarvis Landry is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly can, whether it's Amendola or someone else, step in and become that? That's
whomever,
the one thing you've seen in every Dolphins quarterback going back to Brian Hartline, is they've had their guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose your guy, can you develop that rapport with someone while also coming back from injury? I think it would have been easier for Ryan Tannehill to come back for a team that still had Jarvis Landry. The Dolphins had to make a decision. The Dolphins want more of the long ball. They want more than the possession type receiver.
They want more evenly distributed of an attack.
Get Kenny Stills involved a little more. See if Devontae Parker has something. I get all of that. But without your safety net, I think that's where it gets hard. That's why I think, for as much as I've downplayed and we haven't spoken about the OTAs and the mandatory minicamp this week, I think that's really important. And where we saw Landry talk about that he's working with his Browns quarterbacks more than he worked with Tannehill, I hope we continue to see those feel-good stories of Tannehill out at Tropical Park or something, throwing the ball around with Dolphins receivers. I think that's really important. He needs to come to camp. He needs to go into the preseason. He needs to go into the season with the chemistry of someone who, one, has lost a year of playing football, but also lost his safety net.
So I guess in terms of receiving threats that he would be coming back with, it's only Kenny Stills, and he had less than a full season with Kenny Stills.
And Devontae Parker.
And
they had a reasonable amount of time, but Devontae never was. And, of course, we can go back and forth as to whether he will be and what some other Dolphins receivers think. I think he'll have more of a tight end threat, though, than he's had before. And I don't think he regrets missing the Julius Thomas era at all anyway there. But that, to me, is I think all these minicamps are a bunch of BS. Without full pads, without hitting, you don't really get it. Yeah, he can scramble all he wants now. No one's taking him down at the knee. But you can develop the chemistry and the trust.
Sure.
And I would like them to report to camp with that.
And particularly the knowledge of where guys are going to be and the spots that they run to and all that. So
where they like the ball, things
right,
like that.
So, but I understand the point that you're making, though, which is that Jarvis, even if you don't think he's worth the money or whatever, he was worth it to Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
Because at the very least, Ryan Tannehill knows, well, maybe I can't scramble out of the situation, but I know where Jarvis is going to be.
Right.
And that security is certainly an important factor. But I feel like, so Carson Wentz, obviously you mentioned him. I don't even know if he's ready for the start of the season. So that, like, for me, of between Tannehill, Wentz, Watson, and Luck, I feel best about Tannehill, oddly, even though he's missed more than a season, because I don't feel like he relied that much on athleticism, and that is the scare, and we just talked about it with Stefano Fusaro of ESPN, where Watson coming back, you feel like there's some concern that if it happens again, if he sprains a knee or if he sprains an ankle, that this becomes a repetitive problem, that he came out of the box so strong that it looked like he was going to be their franchise quarterback. And if he stays healthy for 16 games, I have no doubt that he will be.
Right.
But the fact that you start your career with injury, whereas we've seen Ryan Tannehill not just be healthy but be an Iron Man for 5+ years before picking up this injury, it's why I still feel like, okay, he's going to be a reasonable facsimile of himself, because how many beatings does he take? How many injuries has he had? And he's carried on playing every week. So I feel like it'll be relatively steady. I feel like starting your career with an injury is a pretty dangerous precursor to what could end up happening for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, well, it's so in any sport, the injury-prone questions. But we've also seen plenty of guys who've started careers with injuries and then really settled in and found their niche and who they are. So the question becomes this. Has the game changed between the RPOs and that style of game where you have to do that also? That's, I mean, do you think they're going to put Ryan Tannehill in a series of RPOs and risk that knee, yes or no? Or do you say as a coach, we have to do this because this is where the game is going? It went to the West Coast offense.
Correct.
Everyone went to the West Coast offense. Mm-hmm. We've seen more RPOs right now, where some people confuse them with, you know, with different plays. Are they going to go in that direction? That's what I'm curious to see. Or is there a specific Ryan Tannehill style that the coaching savant, the coach whisperer, Adam Gase, has put together and has put on hold, taken that playbook, put it on the shelf when Ryan was out, and now he's ready to expose it all over again, like the really strong finish to the season 2 years ago?
You have to, for me, you have to empty out the playbook. You cannot protect him. You can't be scared of injury, because if you basically take away anything that makes him different, he's just a pedestrian average quarterback.
And yet,
quarterback,
when I spoke
to
Hassan Whiteside this season with the big, bulky knee brace, he says, when you're wearing it, you never feel like yourself. Can you put out of sight, out of mind?
It would certainly be fun to watch this year for the Dolphins, and I think, it frankly, their season rests on it. Coming up next, it's the Big O, continued coverage of the U.S. winning the World Cup, some free agency, some Dolphins, all the great stuff here on the Big O Show is coming up next. Ira, good stuff.
Enjoyed
this week.
The soccer podcast these last 4 hours. Thank you so much, Chris.
Coming up next, it's the Big O Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.